Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is the difference between being a hero and being a good leader? My guest today learned that lesson quite literally under fire. Former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell deployed once to Afghanistan and twice to Iraq, where he served as commander of a 40-man infantry platoon known as Joker 1. Joker 1 arrived in Ramadi in March of 2004, a time when the city, a little smaller than Arlington, was about to explode into insurgent-led violence. They fought house to house nearly every day of their seven-month tour, suffering the highest casualty rate of any Marine unit since Vietnam. Yet under Campbell's leadership, the team of men managed to keep the enemy from gaining control of Ramadi without ever losing sight of their obligations to one another. Donovan Campbell lives in Dallas now. His book has just been re-released in paperback. It's called Joker One, a Marine platoon story of courage, leadership, and brotherhood. Donovan, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me.
You write that you didn't realize until after the tour how important military decorations are, ribbons and medals and things like that. You regretted that you hadn't done more in that vein for your platoon, and so you wrote the book.
That's right. It took going back to school for me to realize that not only was what the military was doing unique, but also what my men and I were doing within the military was unique. So because my world was so small, it just seemed to me that, of course, everyone goes to war. It's so straightforward. And then once one goes to war, of course you fight 3 and 4 times a day or 3 and 4 times a week, whatever it shakes out. Everyone's doing that. And it took going to business school and being around my peers and seeing, one, very few people are in the military or going to war. And then it took talking to a lot of my friends who'd also been overseas to realize that, two, most people fighting don't see that same level of combat day in and day out. And then it took me looking at my business school peers and looking at how they were rewarded for performance for me to realize that I just totally missed the ball when it came to rewarding my guys. Because in the military, when someone literally takes a bullet for their comrade, or someone literally risks their life to rescue the life of someone else, you cannot give them a bonus. You can't give them a vacation. You usually can't give them a promotion. All you can do is just give them this tiny bit of metal and put a ribbon around it and stick it on their chest and say, good job. And I didn't do that. I didn't realize how important those things work. That's one of the only tools that we have to say, great job. And oh, by the way, you put your life at risk, and thank you for doing that. So I did not write my men enough awards. It was a real failure of mine, and I wish I could redo that.
You never had a normal day in 7 months. How do you maintain the kind of energy that you need, not just physically, but emotionally, to keep going?
Well, a lot of times I didn't. So I would tell you that by the end of the tour, I was pretty burnt out, certainly on some level physically, but mainly emotionally. I think the day that we left the base and went into another base and left all of our ammunition behind and were essentially out of the fight, I think I slept for about 20 straight hours because I was just so tired. There are a few ways, though, that I think a lot of guys try to maintain their energy. The first is really by thinking about your Marines before you think about yourself. For whatever reason, that seems to help maintain energy because you're constantly thinking, okay, how are my guys? How are they doing? Are they well rested back in the base? Are we taking care of them? Or am I not taxing them appropriately? Am I taxing them too much? And though that takes energy, it takes the focus off of yourself. So that helps. The second thing that helped me out a lot was my Christian faith. I mean, it certainly was tested quite strongly overseas, which is what happens when you see evil up close and personal and you just don't know why it exists and you never necessarily get an answer. But at the end of the day, you can retreat and you can say, okay, I do believe that though I don't and probably will never understand a lot of this, there's a God who's good that gives it meaning. And that does give you, whether you believe in God or not, that does give you some pretty strong psychological armor. That belief does help. So that was the second thing. And then the third thing was by just spending some time writing down in a journal letters to my wife. For whatever reason, that really helped me pull back, forget for a little while that I was where I was, and it helped me relax and gain some more energy, if you will.
Did you believe God was with you as an American or as Donovan Campbell human being?
As Donovan Campbell human being. Mm-hmm. I think most people wouldn't say, you know, God fights. Most Orthodox Christians wouldn't necessarily say, okay, we are modern day crusaders and, you know, God is definitely fighting for America. They would say, I am a Christian. I believe in God. I believe that he is a God of all people, that, you know, in the Christian faith, the sacrifice that he made in Christ is for all people. It's not for Americans only. We would be, you know, very unorthodox if we were to believe that. And, you know, my job here isn't to, you know, I guess spread the faith, if you will, so much as to serve faithfully where I am at, to take care of those who cannot take care of themselves, and to lead my Marines unselfishly rather than selfishly. That I think, was what I tried to do, and I think what most people would try to do.
You have a really poignant story in the book that, honestly, I had never given any thought to, and that was the fact that you had access to a cell phone so that you could call home on a frequent basis. And initially, that wasn't something that most of the men in your platoon had. And I was really struck by that because I think we might not think about how important that is.
That was one of the many lessons I learned the hard way. And that lesson was that oftentimes when you have increased rank, you have increased access to privilege or increased access to resources. And it's really tempting to use those resources more frequently than those whom you lead. And sometimes that's appropriate. You know, sometimes you do need to be on the internet more because the demands of your job are such that you have to understand, you know, big picture X or big picture Y to thus translate that down and be an effective leader to your men. But sometimes you're just taking advantage of creature comforts that those whom you lead do not have. And I didn't realize how observant my Marines were and how they noticed every little thing. And I was essentially taking advantage of a creature comfort that they did not have and that they could not have. And they noticed that. And as the book mentions, they brought it up and said, "Hey, sir, we're seeing you're calling home more often than we are." And yeah, that cut me to the quick, because what it says is, "Hey, sir, we see you taking care of yourself and your needs before you're taking care of us. Like, we notice that." And not that I am certainly perfect in this area from here on out, but I never forgot how the small acts of service or the small acts of equality, if you will, can make a really big difference for good or for ill.
Is it better to go into a really dangerous mission like the one you did? And I know it turned out to be much more dangerous than you were led to anticipate. Is it better to go into it assuming that you have the power to bring everybody back in one piece? Or is it better to accept before you start that that's probably impossible?
Better to accept before you start that it's probably impossible. And I think that the generation of Marines that are being trained now by the people who have been overseas, mm-hmm. and have fought, are being trained, at least I hope, and I've been told they're being trained to assume that mindset. I was trained by a peacetime military, and though my training was great and my trainers were great, I have nothing against them, it's impossible to explain combat if you haven't been there. And combat tends to be very, very humbling because, you see, no matter how hard you try or how hard you train or how well you plan, a lot of times circumstances and the enemy have a vote, and your best intentions are ruined. If you haven't seen that, you do exercises. And the result of exercises tends to be the result of zero defects. So for whatever reason, a little bit of that leaked into kind of the training, and you kind of go overseas, at least I did, with this mentality of, okay, if something goes wrong, it's because I screwed something up. And if I just do everything right, and my guys and I do everything right, then the enemy will have no opportunity to wound or kill us. We should be in great shape. And it's just not true. One, you're not going to do everything right, and two, your enemy, give them credit. They're very intelligent a lot of the times. They have just as strong of a will to live as do you. Very often, they plan just like you do, and a lot of times they're disciplined and they execute well. And to fail to take that into account is very foolish, and it's an arrogance that will likely get more of your Marines killed or wounded than a humility will. So I think it's much better to go over there saying, something bad will probably happen, and it will probably be out of my control. And that will help you from cratering when it does happen. And all you do is sit there and say, what did I do wrong?
Former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell is my guest. His book is called Joker One, a Marine Platoon story of courage, leadership, and brotherhood. We'll resume our conversation with Donovan in just a couple of minutes and invite you to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. If you would like to make a contribution to KERA now, and we ask that you would, give us a call at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is here now. And Jeff, we do have some copies of Donovan Campbell's new book.
Yes, we do. Like with many of our authors on the show, Chris, if you call now, 888-694-6931, we can say thanks for your $120 membership gift to the station with your very own copy of Donovan Campbell's book, Joker One. Of course, you can go out and get this book at the bookstore. We'd encourage you to do so if you find this conversation as captivating as I do in the other room. We suggest that you check it out and read all you can about the experiences of those who represent and protect us overseas. But, you know, you can support your public radio station, and we can say thanks with a number of things, including your very own copy of Joker One.
Your support of this station makes it possible for us to have an hour-long conversation with someone like Donovan Campbell to really get into the meat of the subject. There is so much, obviously, in the book that we won't get to this afternoon, but an hour in this current media climate is a luxury, and it's a luxury that you afford us by your support of the station. We're public radio. We exist because a group of people in North Texas say, hey, it's really important to be able to talk about things for more than a soundbite's worth of time. There are certain stories for which that might be appropriate. We don't know too many of them, but we love the fact that you engage with our guests, with the audience, with us on these topics. And it's possible because you call 1-888-694-6931 and say, yes, I want to talk. I want to hear people talking about things for a substantive amount of time and not trying to summarize things into 15 seconds.
Chris, we've got an update. We've raised about $243,000 for the drive so far. And everyone knows our overall goal is $600,000. So we're getting closer and closer to halfway. For the Think Show today, our goal is to reach $250,000 raised by 2 p.m. So we've got about $7,000 to raise between now and 2 o'clock. So if you've considered joining the station, if you've considered it, you've probably thought, oh, I'll join KERA at some point. Maybe next week. If they're still on the drive next week, and you said this to yourself last week, by the way, I'll join next week. Well, it's next week. It's Monday, and this is a perfect opportunity to take a couple of minutes right now and dial 888-694-6931 or click online to kera.org. Make your contribution there. If you're sitting at your desk, if you're listening at work, if you're already on the internet, it's so easy to go to kera.org. Make the quick contribution, very safe and secure, and you'll be on your way, and we'll be on our way to hopefully hitting the 250,000 mark by 2 o'clock today.
You might be in a position to join KERA at the Friends level. That's $1,500 a year. We can set that up for you so that we do it a month at a time, and it basically sets up a $125 monthly draw from your checking account. You can adjust those amounts at any time that you want to, but it makes it really easy to make a significant contribution to KERA more affordable and easier to sort of work into your budget. We like it because then we know that every month your money's coming in and we can budget accordingly.
Yeah, it makes it really easy for the station. And over 7,000 members of KERA use the sustaining membership program. Of course, you can use your credit card, your debit card. You can send us a personal check, however you want to do it. But please take that next step and become more than just a listener. Call 888-694-6931 right now.
I want to thank Stanley Whitehead in Dallas and William Bailey in Murphy for their contributions this hour. Also, Patrick Ewing in Dallas and Abigail Calderon in Dallas. We would love to read your name on the air. Give us a call now, 1-888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org. Back in a minute to talk with Lieutenant Donovan Campbell.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell. His book has just been re-released in paperback. It's called Joker One, a Marine Platoon story of courage, leadership, and brotherhood. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. Americans at home are very appropriately in the habit of thanking a member of the military for their service to the country. Was it always for you, when you were deployed, easy to connect service to your country with trying to keep yourself and your men alive and just get through every day?
Yes and no. I mean, on some level, everyone who joins the military as a volunteer really does connect very explicitly with the idea of service to your country, because you know, no one's putting a gun in your head and saying, join the military. So the people who have joined, and especially the ones who deploy, or especially the ones who deploy with the frontline infantry or the special forces, generally are very motivated to be where they are. And so they sort of abstractly, intellectually connect with the idea of service. But once you're overseas, at least this is what happened with me, the idea of home just fades, because overseas, and I've been to both Iraq and Afghanistan, it is so unlike anything at home that it just becomes very difficult to live in that world while you still cling to the world of home. It's just a lot easier to forget that it's a lot easier to think that home doesn't exist. The only reality you have is the reality that you have overseas. And so most of the time, you know, you're sort of motivated, at least at the very front lines or at the tactical level, you're motivated by the idea of just trying to keep your guys alive and not screwing up, you know, tomorrow, this afternoon, in the next 10 minutes, and certainly not hurting anyone who doesn't need to be hurt. Because, you know, for as fierce, if you will, as the Marines are, they very much want to do the right thing, and you very much want to make sure that you're protecting the people that you'd be protected. That's a very motivating mission, you know, not only go out and kill bad guys, quite frankly, but also protect people who need to be protected. Most people have this sort of guardian mindset. So that's something I think that motivates you on a day-to-day basis, is how do you do a good job while you're there, and how do you take care of your men or the guys to your right and to your left while you're there. Very rarely do you pull back and say, terrific, I am serving my country right now. Usually you're, at least in my opinion, you're much more focused on how do I get through the day well.
How old were you in 2004?
24.
It's really interesting to me because as you write here, I get the sense that you were much more afraid of making a bad decision that would hurt other people than you were afraid of losing your own life.
Well, there's just no time to be afraid of losing your own life. I mean, I was always scared before the missions, and I was always scared after the missions. For myself, sometimes, definitely, because after you've seen enough people wounded and enough people killed, and I think within 2 weeks of being there, one of my counterparts, another lieutenant, had his entire left side filleted by an IED, and so there was this real sense of, oh my gosh, not only does it happen to everyone, it certainly happens to lieutenants, and then, you know, it happens, you know, to more and more of your friends, and you see more and more guys come back, you know, without their eyes or with, you know, half of their hand, and you start saying, oh my goodness, not only can this happen, but it will happen, and it'll likely happen to me at some point in time. It's just a simple law of averages. So there's definitely, you know, there definitely is a fear for yourself before and after the missions. During the missions, as a lieutenant, as someone who had 40 men, I was usually just so busy trying to figure out what came next or where my men were, if we were fighting, who was wounded, and where I need to move people next. There just wasn't any time to worry about myself. That's A. And then B, even before and after, while there's fear for yourself, it certainly is there. I think because the Marines train you so well as a lieutenant or as an officer, they train you that you exist for your men. You don't exist to accumulate medals or pin more shiny bars on your shoulder. You exist because the moms of America have given you 40 guys. And they've said, here you go. You get to take care of them. And your job is to bring them back better than you found them. And you can't always do that. But they tell you very much, these are a precious resource. It takes America 18 years to make a Marine. You have them, Lieutenant. So what are you going to do with them? Life isn't about you. Your job isn't about you. Your job is about your guys. So you definitely, at least I certainly was, more scared of screwing up with this precious resource that I was a steward of, because I, you know, I didn't own it. I give them back eventually. I was much more scared of screwing up that or screwing up my mission over the long run than I was about getting, you know, hurt or wounded, killed or wounded, I should say.
There was a memorial service for the Marine that you did lose, and you were scared to go there and to meet his family. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, I lost my Marine about halfway through, and you know, you write the letter home to his wife, and you inventory his gear, you and the other Marines inventory his gear, and that's just, I mean, it's just so sobering. It's, you know, everything that was Todd Boulding, you know, laid out in a 8-foot by 8-foot square in a hangar, and you're packing into a duffel bag, trying to send it home. So, you know, you go through that, and you have to keep functioning, so you kind of put aside what his family feels like or felt like when they heard the news, and just go on. And then, you know, have a memorial service, and it's, okay, his family's going to be there, and you got to sort of face all that again. And, you know, on some level, you're telling yourself, well, you know, your son is dead because I screwed up. Or even if I didn't screw up, he certainly died on my watch. I mean, if there's anyone whose fault it is, it's mine. And so there's this burden of responsibility that is really hard. It's hard to take that burden into a face-to-face meeting with the person whom you think you failed. So I just, you know, I was really hesitant to go and talk to Todd's mom, and I don't even remember if she said anything. I just remember that she hugged me, and so felt a lot better after that.
Can you talk for a minute about what it takes to make sure that everybody is okay? I mean, you can look at them and know physiologically they're all right, and you had some issues where people were being dehydrated and you had to kind of look out, but how do you know that they're sort of stable and able to function?
Well, I think you have to think along three axes: physical, mental, spiritual. All those are extraordinarily important, whether one believes in sort of a metaphysical existence or not. The fact of the matter is that when you see a lot of people dying, the question of what happens when I die is a big one.
And it's there all the time.
Yeah, it's just there all the time. It's not normal. You're not normal 18-year-olds who are, you know, 8 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, you're 18, 19, 20-year-olds who are watching their friends carted off on stretchers all the time, every day, pretty much. And so there's this very immediate concern with what happens to me when I take a bullet through my head or when I take a piece of shrapnel through my neck. What happens to me? So that's definitely a component. So the physical component is, like you mentioned, making sure that to the extent that you can, they're well fed, they're well rested, that there's water when it's 130 degrees out, that the living conditions are at least somewhat sanitary, and you know, you're trying to think of how to rotate various different squads of yours through rest cycles so that at least there's at least some downtime or some sleep. So that's definitely one. That's pretty consuming. Then, of course, there's mental. Is my team doing well? Do I detect any animosities between my subordinate leaders? Do I sense that my squads are getting competitive or fighting about some stupid issue that I'm going to have to get involved in? How's Pepitone? His grandfather died. I got to make sure that, you know, he's not thinking about that or that he's okay with that. So there's definitely the, okay, what is my team dynamic like? And then do I sense it that there are any individuals that are hurting? And then there's the whole issue of, okay, guys, we may die. My job here isn't to evangelize, but if you have questions about, you know, what life means and how to find meaning of this evil, or maybe you just don't know that there is any meaning, you just want to talk to someone, that's what I'm here to do. Because you have chaplains. But chaplain's not the guy who sits next to you and lobs a grenade at someone. The chaplain is a run on the street and say, okay, let me grab you and pull you back. Or the chaplain's not the one who waves his arm and says, hey, follow me, let's go sort it out.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a lieutenant or the sergeant. And so, you know, that's the person I think has more credibility to say, I've seen what you've seen, I've been where you've been, and we can chat about what you want to chat about when it comes to life, when it comes to evil, when it comes to death.
There was a point at which, understandably, part of your job was to kill the enemy, where you would see bodies stacked up and you were sort of gleeful. Did that alarm you?
Not at the time.
And now?
I don't know. I don't think about that as often. And part of the reason that it didn't alarm me at the time was because we almost never got a chance to fire first.
Yeah.
And almost always what would happen was our attackers would shoot at us, and the best cover that they could use was other human beings. So they would shoot at us from crowds, or they would shoot at us from windows. And they knew that the best way for them to escape was just drop their weapons and take five steps around the corner, and now they're a normal civilian. So it was very, very hard fighting. Usually, it was very, very hard walking around, usually getting shot at first, and then feeling like most of the time you could not respond. Because if you did, you would shoot all of these innocent civilians who just happened to be in the area. And the enemy knew that very well. So on the rare occasions, or relatively rare occasions, when you actually got to dig in and you actually got to isolate those of your attackers who were attacking you, and those of your attackers who would, you know, fire rockets into small children, for example, who would fire at you, as happened in my first firefight, from a crowd of small children, for example, you were quite happy when you could kill them. It was just, you know, one, there was a sense of, oh, finally, you know, finally they've stayed around. And two, there was a sense of, okay, great, less people to shoot at me and my guys, and less people to blow up kids. And the fewer people there are that are blowing up children, the better.
Former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell is my guest. We're talking about his book, Joker One, a Marine Platoon story of courage, leadership, and brotherhood. We'll resume this discussion in just a couple of minutes. You're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. We have another number right now that we would ask that you call, 1-888-694-6931. That is the membership number where you can support KERA at any level. You can do a couple of dollars a month. You can do a couple $1,000 for the year, whatever works for you. We do have copies of Donovan Campbell's book, Joker One. It's out in paperback now, so you can buy it at the bookstore for $16. We're not trying to convince you the price has suddenly gone up. However, if you'd like to have a copy and you want to support KERA, you can sort of get it all done with one phone call now to 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I want to thank Elizabeth Covert in Dallas, Jennifer Barnard in Plano, Patricia Berglund in Fort Worth, Raymond Stewart in Flower Mound. Also, we heard from Catherine Venta in Richardson, Lissy Dunlay in Dallas. A lot of people from all over North Texas are calling and supporting KERA and going online to kera.org. The number again is 888-694-6931. Also, thanks to Marty McGee in Plano, Cassie McGregor in Dallas, Jonathan Glass in Dallas, Alicia Hinojosa in Louisville, James Stillwell in Louisville, and Robin Garner in Dallas. Wow, it's an honor roll. It really is.
It's great to hear from everybody, and we would love your call to be next. We are asking everybody who listens to KERA to make a contribution. You decide the amount. But that also means, look, if you listen to us online and maybe you're far away, maybe you're in a different state or country, your support is really appreciated. Of course, we can take care of all this with credit or debit card, so it should be a very simple transaction. If you prefer to write a check, we can do it that way as well. But your support to 1-888-694-6931 guarantees that in North Texas, there is a non-commercial public station that is controlled by people who live and work in this community, who really want to respond to the needs of the community and to discuss things that really, I think, sort of carve out our place in the broader world. We're not, strictly speaking, a locally focused show. We are a locally generated show that allows us to really explore things and how they relate to us.
Yeah, there's never a meeting at the station in these four walls where people sit down and say, this program sponsor isn't going to like this topic. That doesn't happen at KERA. It doesn't happen in public broadcasting. The only sponsor that we're beholden to is you. Your contributions equal 57% of the budget necessary to run this station. And we do sit around and have meetings and talk about what is it that the audience wants to hear, what is it that's important to our audience here in North Texas. And then when audience members like yourself, when you call 888-694-6931, when they send us money, we sit around and we say, how can we carefully, very judiciously spend this very important contribution from the listenership? So those are the things I can guarantee you that are not and are happening here at KERA when you call 888-694-6931.
You may not love every single thing that gets discussed on this show, and in fact, that shows that you're a thinking person, and I would say a broad-minded person, because if you're only tuning to radio shows or programming that reflects exactly what you believe and is your viewpoint, this is not the place to be, and that's certainly not why you listen. We bring you content and allow you, really the focus of the show that Jeff and I think about all the time is trying to understand how and why people think what they think and believe what they believe. We're not trying to convince anybody to believe anything. We just want you to have the information and sort of understand the world around you. It makes it a fascinating project for us. We love having an audience that comes along with us because, quite frankly, there are a lot of stations that don't have an audience that gets the kind of thing that we're trying to do. You do, but we ask that you take just a half step more and understand that it's only possible through listener funding. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also become a member online at kera.org.
Again, you can pick up your very own copy of Joker One, the New York Times bestseller. It's now out in paperback by Donovan Campbell, our guest this hour. When you join the station at the $120 membership level, or join the station at the $120 level and go out and buy your own copy of the book at your favorite retailer or do it online, support the station because we're the ones that are bringing you this conversation. It's your station. It's really your conversation. We're just sort of the conduit. The station is just the conduit for you to find this information, to hear this programming. And we're just asking you to help defray the cost of bringing you these kinds of conversations, defray the cost of Morning Edition and Fresh Air and the Diane Rehm Show. And, of course, Think and Anything You Ever Wanted to Know and the afternoon shows, All Things Considered, The World. These are all programs that you listen to. They all have a cost. We're asking you to help defray that cost.
We like to think the experience is a lot like reading, sitting down and reading a great book or an interview in a magazine, something substantive. If you are in the car and not able to have your eyes on something printed during the day, this is a terrific way to continue sort of stimulating your mind. We're really proud to have an audience that wants this content. Your desire and your listening are really important to us, but your financial support is what actually makes it possible for us to flip on the transmitter every day. The telephone number to call is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online, check out thank you gifts, find the different ways to pay at kera.org. We'll resume our conversation about Joker One in just a minute with former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell. His best-selling book is called Joker One, a Marine Platoon's Story of Courage, Leadership, and Brotherhood. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. There's a kind of a cool story in the book. One of your guys had a son born, and you somehow got cigars to pass out, and you cut off the tips with your bayonets.
That was a great day. There weren't a lot of days where you could just relax and just sort of sit around and celebrate, and especially relax where kind of some of the barriers of rank drop down.
Yeah.
And it was just, in this case, it was myself and my three squad leaders. So it was just, you know, the four Joker One leaders just sitting together and saying, hey, congratulations, Liza. You know, good job. We knew you had it in you. So that was a great day. There weren't a lot of those, but that was a good one.
And there was also an incident with a catfish.
Oh, my goodness. So Marines are hilarious. They're just – one of my friends, actually a mentor of mine, you know, was trying to describe Marines. He said, you know, they'll be the funniest things you've ever seen. They'll break your heart. They'll ask you to give their daughters away at weddings. They'll get into more trouble than a box of snakes. And they're just the most special creatures imaginable. And – sure enough, you know, at the end of the day, they're 18 mostly. Most of these guys on the front lines, most of the infantrymen are between 18 and 21, and you forget how young they are. And so sometimes when they drop their gear and they're finding joy in the things that an 18-year-old finds joy in, it surprises you, and you say, oh, my goodness. You sort of take a step back and like, well, that's right. At the end of the day, you are just a high school kid – or you're a very early college age kid. And so one day, we didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity for a long time. And so eventually they got these big 50-gallon red water drums set up on our base. And there was an Iraqi contractor that was hired to come in and pump those things full of water once every 2 weeks or so. And then you would have enough water for showers, you know, for a couple of days or however long they lasted. It was a great day when, you know, the water truck showed up and filled the thing with water.
Because between that, it was baby wipes.
It was baby wipes, or if we had enough bottled water, you would pour bottled water on yourself or take bottled water showers, or it was, you know, or just live in your own filth, which is not that exciting, but doable. So every time this thing would show up, you would take a shower and you'd always come out smelling like a little bit stranger than when you went in. It didn't feel like this was the purified water that we were paying for. Well, sure enough, one day one of my guys comes in, Williams, and he was wiggling like this, you know, sort of happy puppy. You could tell he couldn't wait to tell me something. I was like, okay, Williams, what is it? What do you got for me? He's like, sir. There's a catfish in our water. I was like, what? Total non sequitur. What do you mean? Sure enough, in this big 50-gallon water drum, most of the water had been sucked out, and there, swimming in little circles at the very bottom of it, was a catfish. What this catfish indicated was that we were not, in fact, getting purified water, but the contractor was, in fact, going to, I think it was an offshoot of the Euphrates that was right above us, just sucking out the water for the Euphrates and putting it into this drum. And I immediately thought to the medical briefing we got, which said, like, you know, don't go into the rivers, don't drink the water. They have all sorts of weird parasites.
Dysentery and all kinds of problems.
Yeah. All sorts of stuff. I'm like, great, great. We're so paranoid about going in the river. But we were bathing in it. So welcome to combat.
Let's go to the phones now, and we'll speak with Greg in Dallas. Hey, Greg.
Yes, Lieutenant Campbell. This is Lieutenant Bowling of the National Guard. You were talking about your faith and dealing with your soldiers' religious worries, and I just wanted to ask you, not just in combat, but what's the overall religious climate in the Marine Corps?
Hard to say. The Marines are a fairly conservative organization in general, and by conservative I mean they tend to take incremental steps over time rather than favoring large-scale change all at once. I would say the Marine Corps, from my very limited perspective, is very supportive of traditional religion, is very supportive of traditional religion that predominates in America, which is Christianity. But the number of officers and enlisted Marines who say read their Bible every day is relatively low as a percentage of the general population. There are going to be very few people who tell you you are a fool for believing in God, but similarly there are very few people who are going to say, hey, let's pray together this morning. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I hope it gives you some sense as to how things, oh, at least my experience of religion in the Marine Corps.
I want to talk a little bit about when you returned to the real world. I shouldn't say the real world because that world is real too. It's just the real world that Americans know. I know it was a hard adjustment. Today you're in corporate America. Do you ever sit in a meeting and think, I cannot believe that people are complaining about this thing? Do they not know what else is happening out there?
2 years ago, I might have. And that was what was part of the adjustment that was so hard, was looking at, again, a lot of my peers in business school and saying to myself, okay, you had a very similar education. You had similar opportunities in life. The men that I served with had neither, yet they're overseas sacrificing anyway. Why aren't you there? Or not only why aren't you there, but also you didn't do that, and now you're complaining about this? Are you kidding me? Or what do you mean you can't do this in time? That you have 24 hours in a day. You go to class 4 of those hours. Are you really telling me that you can't meet this deadline? And so for a while, there was definitely some selfishness or some bitterness that I carried. And it took me a while to realize that the blessing of my experience was that, and look, everyone who goes over there and processes it well, the real blessing is that you get perspective rammed down your throat. You have no choice in getting this perspective. You just get it. And you get this, you get a perspective on what matters, what doesn't, what is truly hard, what is not. And that's something that I certainly did not anticipate getting, but walked away with anyway. So it's sort of grace that I even have that to begin with, A. And B is, you realize, look, life at the end of the day, it's not about me. And so my life isn't to sit here and resent people who complain about X or Y. The first thing I should do is be very thankful that I've been graced by some perspective. I've been lucky and blessed to have some perspective, as opposed to resent others for not having the same perspective. And the second thing is to say, okay, well, because I have this, then I have a responsibility to do my best to be calm, to be kind, to be patient, and not to be bitter or resentful. Because you're just as bad if you're bitter and resentful of others because they care about this and you can't believe they care about it, as you are if you care about this crazy thing that isn't really that important at the end of the day. So, look, I'm by no means perfect in this area and certainly fail quite often, but I do my best to say, hey, listen, my job isn't to be upset about this. My job is to model out through my actions a different way of dealing with these problems.
Have you come to an understanding or any perspective at all on how some people are able to emerge from having fought under terrible conditions and be pretty mentally okay, and how others are really severely damaged, and what the difference is between the two?
I've given it some thought, and I know that there are some studies that are done. I think more studies are done that focus on the wounded and the broken mentally, psychologically, than on those who are successful, those who have adapted successfully. Because I think there's an assumption, okay, well, they're okay.
Don't worry about them.
Yeah, don't worry about them.
They'll do.
They'll be fine. But I have given it some thought, and there are some things that people have told me make a big difference. So family, having a close family, a tight family structure, friends, having good friends inside and outside the military, unit cohesion while overseas. I've been told that units with very tight cohesion tend to fare better as individuals once they have left combat than those that do not have it. And the fourth thing is faith. You know, regardless of where you stand on that, that is one element that helps you make sense of things that are difficult. And then I think the final thing that has really helped me is having kids. I mean, I have no choice.
Nothing slams you back into perspective like that.
Oh, yeah, and I've got no choice. I've got to be solid for them. I have to. There's no choice but to try and keep it getting better so they get a good picture of a healthy father, a healthy husband.
Former Marine Lieutenant Donovan Campbell was deployed twice to Iraq, once to Afghanistan. In Iraq in 2004, he served as commander of a 40-man infantry platoon in Ramadi. His book is called Joker One, a Marine platoon story of courage, leadership, and brotherhood. Donovan, thank you so much for coming in and spending the hour with us.
Thank you for having me, Chris. I very much appreciate it.
My name is Chris Boyd. We want to thank all of you who have been listening this hour. We want to welcome those of you who have just joined as new members, and thank you for understanding that it is only by your support that we're able to bring you in-depth conversations like this one, which I hope for you was as fascinating as it was for me. We would ask now that you take just a moment. We've got about 6 minutes before the top of the next hour. Take just a moment to call 1-888-694-6931. Become the next new or renew member, the next supporter of KERA.
Chris, every time we have a combat veteran, whether they've had years and years and years to think about their experiences, or they're young, a young person like Donovan Campbell, younger than me at least.
I know his face is completely smooth. He looks like a kid.
Right.
He's been through so much.
But anytime we're able to peel back the label, peel back a couple of layers and actually hear how the experiences have affected them and what their thinking was and how they approached these incredibly challenging experiences. And most of them wouldn't change the way things were, for anything, because it's just always really profound to me. And I think that it's a great opportunity for you as a listener to this show to hear a story that you may not be exposed to anywhere else. And I was telling Donovan on the way into the studio today that's why we're really excited to have him in. And if you feel that way, if you appreciated this conversation, please support it right now with a quick call to 888-694-6931 or an online contribution at kera.org.
I want to thank Mr. Edward Sledge in Austin. Thank you for calling from Austin or sending email or joining online. Dr. Lori Porter in Arlington also has joined. Ms. Francesca Cooper in Fort Worth. Jamie Nicholson in Murphy. Thank you very much. Also thanks to Byron and Jan Killen in Irving and Manuel Victor in McKinney.
We'd love to thank you. We'd love to see that you have made your gift of support. Chris, we were going for hitting that $250,000 raised mark by the end of the show today at 2 o'clock. We're at $244,715, so just a little over $5,000 left to go to make our goal, our sort of self-imposed and you know, granted, arbitrary goal for the Think Show today. But we want to stay on track here, and we really need to get to $250,000 by 2 o'clock today so that we can reasonably expect that we'll be able to make it to the overall goal of $600,000 by the end of the week. So please call now. Please do your part right now. If you've waited, if you thought over the weekend, well, if they're still pledging next week, I'll join. Well, you're listening. We're still pledging. We're waiting to hear from you. The number is 888-694-6931.
Joker One is a really amazing book. We have it available as a thank you gift at the $120 level. Of course, you could give, you know, $104 or something and then go buy it for $16, and that would sort of come out the same price.
Sure.
But I have to tell you, this is one of those books. It is not a 60,000-foot view of the war and how it's been fought. It is a very close-up inside story of the experience of these 40 men, and sometimes they were valiant, sometimes they stumbled, sometimes they failed, and often they won. It's one of those books that if someone else is in the room while you're reading it, you're going to have to stop every 5 minutes and say, you would not believe this, and tell the story. It's that kind of book. It's beautifully told. It's amazing how multi-talented Donovan Campbell is at this age. The book is a New York Times bestseller. He's from right here in this community. He lives in Dallas. Support the station and support our ability to bring you people like this at 1-888-694-6931.
It is your public radio station, and these conversations are yours. So do your part right now. You'll be supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, also 100.1 K261 CW in Tyler, 88.3 K202DR in Wichita Falls, and 99.3 K257 EV in Sherman. But no matter where you listen, you're still getting KERA. You still hear the Think Show. And it's still a program that is produced solely for your use. There's no other reason to do public radio except for you, the public, the person who listens to the station, the person who gets something out of these conversations. So please support it, 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
Special thanks to Dr. Jayshree Novak in Plano, Irene Clark in Grapevine. Thanks to Sherry Johnson in Dallas, Dr. Jamie Thornton in Fort Worth, and everyone who is on the line now. Your contribution, whether it is $50 or $5,000 or anywhere in between, or any amount that you choose, $5 if you want to make an additional gift, that's a vote for public radio. And it is a vote that says, keep doing what you're doing. This service is important. We don't want all the media controlled by big corporations and by interests that are really more interested in selling a product than in exploring ideas. Your cash contribution helps make this station possible. 1-888-694-6931 is the number to call.
And when you do make that contribution, you know that your dollars are going to work providing a service that you already use. You're listening now. You've been listening throughout this winter membership campaign. This is just one of three periods of time in the year that we take a little bit of time away from the show. And we come on the air and we say, listen, we're doing this. It costs money. And your contributions are 57% of the budget around here. It's just one of three time periods in the year. The rest of the year, you get the regular schedule. You get an incredibly robust programming lineup. The conversations that we have on Think, if you take away the news and you take away the two breaks and you take away the one-minute billboard at the top, it's 48 and a half minutes of conversation about whatever the topic is with whomever the guest is that day. That's what you're paying for when you call 888-694-6931. Chris, we're at $245,000 raised. We want to try to get to $250,000 250,000 by today at 2, so please call right now.
Your contribution in whatever amount makes a difference. And we would ask that if you are already a member in good standing, that you maybe take a couple minutes to evangelize for us on whatever social media site that you might choose, or just call a friend that you know loves the station and say, hey, is your membership up to date? We appreciate your call at 1-888-694-6931. You can also make a contribution online at kera.org. Thank you very much.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.